You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today is Monday, August 23rd.
Now what we've decided collectively is that our role in higher education, and more broadly our role as an economy, is to identify the top 1% and turn them into billionaires. That's not what America's about.
That was Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU's Stern School of Business, speaking about the future of higher education post-COVID. We'll dig into that a little later on, but first, your morning headlines. We begin in Afghanistan, in the Panjshir Valley, where the Taliban is sending hundreds of fighters after local officials refuse to hand over control. Ahmad Massoud, leader of Afghanistan's last major outpost of anti-Taliban resistance, told Reuters that his forces were ready to fight if the Taliban tried to take control, but hoped that they would be open to talks. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin ordered the activation of the Civil Reserve Air Fleet to help with evacuations. If you're unfamiliar with the Civil Reserve Air Fleet, it's a nearly 70-year-old military arrangement with over a dozen commercial airlines that only helps in a major national defense emergency. This activation is only the third time it's ever been used in history. There are 18 aircraft from six airlines. The commercial airlines won't fly directly to Kabul. Instead, they'll transport passengers already evacuated who have been brought to U.S. bases in the Middle East. Meanwhile, at Kabul airport, conditions continue to deteriorate as entry gates were for the most part closed on Sunday. U.S. forces extended its perimeter around the airport and were reportedly in discussions with the Taliban about ensuring safe passage. According to CNN, families were also being separated and sent to different countries. Whether this is by choice or because of the chaos is unclear. The Taliban placed blame for the situation squarely on the U.S. President Joe Biden spoke on Sunday afternoon about evacuation efforts.
There is no way to evacuate this many people without pain and loss of heartbreaking images you see on television. It's just a fact. We're bringing our citizens, NATO allies, Afghanis who helped us in the war effort. But we have a long way to go, and a lot could still go wrong.
The president added that the U.S. successfully evacuated more than 11,000 people over the weekend. He said he would extend the August 31st deadline to complete evacuations if necessary. Next, an update on COVID. Hospitals in the South and Midwest say they're treating more children with COVID than ever before as the Delta variant continues to spread among the unvaccinated. An estimated 2,000 children are currently hospitalized with COVID and 400 have died since the beginning of the pandemic, according to Francis Collins, head of the National Institutes of Health. Although children are less likely to die or experience severe illness, new data from the Department of Health and Human Services show that pediatric hospitalizations are at the highest point since the agency started tracking them last year. The biggest worry for hospitals now is dealing with the wave of new hospitalizations expected once schools open across the U.S. Finally, we end in Tennessee, where rescuers continue to search for survivors after record-breaking rain brought flash floods to the central part of the state. At least 22 people have died, including two twin toddlers who were swept from their father's arms, according to family members. Dozens are still missing. The storms brought 17 inches of rain to the area over 24 hours. National Weather Service meteorologist Chrissy Hurley said the area received about 25% of its yearly rainfall total in a single morning. And now to our daily deep dive. The global pandemic upended not only education systems across the country, but how we think about education itself. With colleges across the country canceling in-person classes, students were stuck going to college from their high school bedrooms. That made many rethink the value proposition. Is taking on the enormous debt that attending college requires still worth it? Here to help me dig into it, Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU's Stern School of Business. Hey, Scott, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, my South Asian parents would be upset for me asking this question, but is college really worth it?
It's situational. I'm talking to a young man today who got into Yale, but is thinking about going to a local college so he can play basketball. My job is to reach through the phone and grab him by the vest and shake him and go, don't be crazy. If you get into an elite university, it's still a difficult certification to turn down because whether we like it or not, we are very brand driven and very certification driven in our economy. So if you have the opportunity to get what I would call an elite certification from a top 100 school, it's still a fantastic return on investment. Now, having said that, some of the progress we're making is that we recognize 2/3 of our youth will likely not end up with a traditional BA. And we're thinking about, all right, how do we build on-ramps for them into the global economy? Now, going to a second-tier school and taking on $250,000 in debt when your family, you know, really doesn't have those resources, I think that's where it gets more difficult and less obvious around whether it's actually worth it. I think what we're questioning is this religious truism that was supposed to be a truism and isn't, that you have failed as a parent if your kid doesn't get a traditional four-year college degree. And there's a cartel where we downshift people from elite universities that have very low acceptance rates to second-tier schools. They raise prices in tandem, most corrupt cartel in the world. And unfortunately, a lot of middle-class kids end up paying a Mercedes price for a Hyundai product.
Is college still valuable? Do you need that college degree?
Well, let's talk about whether it's necessary. And unfortunately, the greatest wealth creator in the history of the modern economy is the U.S. corporation. People romanticize entrepreneurs such as myself, but the reality is on a risk-adjusted basis, if you can get a job at an incredible platform called a Fortune 500 U.S. company, it's a great way to get rich slowly. They'll pay for your health care. They're mindful organizations. They invest in their employees. So that really is, on a risk-adjusted basis, there's nothing like it in terms of providing economic security for people. They're tremendous platforms. It is easier to get into one of these organizations with an AR-15 than without a college degree. And probably the most important thing in higher education that happened in the last 12 months happened outside of higher education, and that is some great firms ranging from Apple to Xerox to Tesla have said that they're going to carve out a meaningful number, percentage of entry-level jobs and provide them for people without traditional college degrees. They're going to try and move towards a more skills-based assessment as opposed to what the majority of us have done, and that is move towards a pure certification-based assessment. Because when you're a corporation and you decide that you're going to only hire people with college degrees, right there you said, we're going to hire fewer Black and Latino people. Right there you said, we're going to hire fewer kids from single-parent homes. Because these communities are underrepresented in traditional kind of elite colleges. So I still think it's a great deal. Do you still need it? I'd like to think that the need is going to degrade a little bit and that we're going to recognize, make greater investments in vocational programming, but there's still no getting around it. It's incredibly powerful. It's incredible certification. The tragedy here, Rena, is that when I applied to UCLA, the acceptance rate was 70%, and I had to apply twice. The acceptance rate this year at the University of California, Los Angeles will be 9%, which means that they no longer have the latitude to take chances on the sons of lower upper middle class households headed by a single immigrant mother, yours truly. So that generosity and that lack of idolatry of exclusivity is the reason I'm here with you now. And I think that we have to return to that. We talk a lot about the cost, the financial cost of education. What gets missed is the incredible non-economic costs. Spring used to be a time of nervousness and joy to see where your kid was going to school. Now it's literally the season of despair. And I hear from dozens of these families where the daughter played by the rules, captain of the soccer team, great SATs, and then gets rejected from the five schools she applied to and ends up at what is, by most standards, a fairly substandard school at the same price. So we in my industry have lost the script. We no longer see ourselves as public servants. We see ourselves as luxury brands. And we need to dramatically expand the number of freshman seats at world-class universities.
What I'm hearing from you is, okay, you get into an Ivy League, of course, you go, it's worth it, do it. But most people can't get into an Ivy League. How do we rethink education? And should there be another track for these students who won't make it into Ivy Leagues?
Yeah, so the Ivy League gets a lot of attention. We're sort of obsessed with it because they're wonderful universities. But the bottom line is, they're not public servants. They're not here in the agency of our nation or the Commonwealth. More students will graduate from FSU this year than the entire Ivy League. Berkeley will graduate more kids from low-income households than the entire Ivy League combined. I thought, and I predicted this, I predicted that these amazing brands, MIT, Harvard, Stanford, would partner with big tech, dramatically expand their enrollments, and sop up all this excess demand that their brands warrant. I was absolutely wrong. They have doubled down on exclusivity. Harvard got 55,000 applications, admitted 1,400 students. They sit on an endowment that's equivalent to about $30 million per student. They could increase their freshman class tenfold without any sacrifice of any quality. They have the resources, but they've decided they want to be Hermes. They're not public servants. So the bottom line is, write them off. They're not here for the Commonwealth. They're not here for the better good. They're here such that the faculty administrators can pay themselves more every day and feel good about being Chanel or Hermes. Where we do make change in the U.S. is through our great public universities, where 2 out of 3 young adults end up. And I think the way we need to reimagine things are, one, first off, we need to acknowledge we're going to have a lot of kids who don't end up with traditional 4-year college degrees and need to figure out a formal on-ramp into the economy for them. For those that do want to get a traditional 4-year degree, I think we need a grand bargain between alumni, the faculty and administrators, and the people, state legislatures who fund these universities. We need additional funding from the state and from the alumni, and then the administrators in return have to guarantee or have to commit to using small and big tech to dramatically expand the supply such that maybe we don't reduce total cost, but we reduce cost per student. If you were to take 50% of our courses online, and as a faculty member, I can tell you the dirty secret of our courses is you could probably take a third or 50% of our sessions into video format. You overnight double the capacity of our schools. You overnight could take admissions rates back up a little bit. So the public universities need to recognize the public servants. We need to fall back in love with the unremarkable and start letting in great kids, just not freakishly remarkable kids. But I think the way we reimagine is we incorporate technology, we hold the universities accountable for lowering the cost and increasing the supply, and we as alumni and as voters have to recognize, or ideally should recognize, that one of the great gifts of the United States is higher education that reaches into middle class and lower income households and pulls out kids that aren't necessarily remarkable. There's some good news here. If you're a remarkable kid in the inner city, you can find Harvard and Harvard will find you. But I can prove to each one of us that 99% of our children will not be in the top 1%. So we need to move back to falling back in love with what I'd call the unremarkables, good kids that aren't necessarily great by the time they're 18.
Well, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be back with Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU's Stern School of Business, on the Recount Daily Pod.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults.
you know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. We're here with Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU's Stern School of Business. You know, President Biden wants to make community college free to help address some of the inequality in America, lift more people out of poverty. Do you think that'll work?
Let me just back up and piss off all my woke followers. I think free college in general, what Senators Warren and Sanders proposed, is a terrible idea. That is nothing but a transfer of wealth, again, which we're very good at, from poor middle class households to wealthy households. Because who can't afford to pay back debt? Wealthy households, who disproportionately over-indexes in college, upper middle class and wealthy households. So if you make college free for what is already mostly people who can afford to pay back their debt, you're just transferring wealth.
But what about community colleges, Scott? Do you think that's different, what Biden's proposing?
I think that is different. I would argue it shouldn't be free. I think people should pay something. The reality is the kids who pay $700 show up to class. Well, I don't think college is a birthright. Now, having said that, community college is dramatically less expensive. One of the opportunities here is to do an arbitrage, and that is the first 2 years is at a community college, like Santa Monica College is one of the best junior colleges in America. And then they transfer to UCLA or UC Irvine or UC Riverside, and it brings down the total four-year cost by 20 to 40%. So there's an arb there. And the reality is the majority of 18-year-olds probably aren't emotionally, intellectually ready for college. So junior college or a leap year, a gap year, I'm a big fan of gap years, I think it's a good idea. The reality is I don't think we want to make college free. I think we have a tendency to go to extremes. We just have to make it doable and affordable.
You know, I went to George Washington University, was a freshman in 1997. Scott, I don't know that I would be able to get into that school today. There's so much pressure. And I look at community colleges, and do you worry that maybe some second tier universities were seeing a decline as they're trying to rethink this?
Well, I can answer that for you. And the answer is no, you wouldn't get in. I mean, or at least majority of us wouldn't get into our schools.
I like your faith in me. Thank you, Scott.
We constantly brag or say, well, I could never get into UCLA now. Well, I could never get into George Washington now. Well, guess what? That means your daughter's not getting in. That's not anything to be proud of. There's just something exceptionally unkind about that. The biggest issue here, college is transformative. It's transformative. The reason you and I are here is because of George Washington and UCLA, or that's a key component of why we're here. It feels like if college represents where we're headed as a nation, where we have morphed is our economy used to be about giving the top 50% a chance to be in the top 10%. Not just anybody could get into college, and nor should they. There should be standards. But if you were good to great, you were going to get into a good to great school. Now what we've decided collectively is that our role in higher education, and more broadly our role as an economy, is to identify the top 1% and turn them into billionaires. That's not what America's about. America is about churning out millionaires, not trying to identify the next billionaire.
So, Scott, I want to ask you a little bit about the economy and business needs. You know, we're seeing this profound worker shortage across the country. How does higher education affect business?
I don't want to say it's outside of higher ed, but the reality is you get a four-year college degree, the unemployment rate is like 3%. If you go to a not even a remarkable school, just a good school, even through the recessions, the unemployment rate among college grads was fairly low. I think the average salary out of undergrad at NYU is 80-something thousand. Coming out of business school, it's 140,000. So coming out of NYU, you're immediately in the top 10%, maybe even the top 2 or 3% of income-earning households at the age of 22 or 29, which is the average age of our business school graduates. There's a tension between capital and labor. Labor's gotten crap kicked out of it for the last 30 years. Since 2008, the NASDAQ has quintupled. The average pay of a CEO has gone from 60 times earnings to 300 times earnings, and minimum wage has exploded from $7.25 to $7.25. We seem to be, including in the media, mildly outraged and shocked that people don't want to work 40 hours a week so they can live in their cars. So for the first time, because of the massive stimulus and the CARES Act, it feels like labor finally has a seat at the table and is able to bring some of the bargaining power that every other constituency have, whether it's shareholders demanding changes in management, whether it's information age workers who've always had more demand than supply. Feels for the first time our frontline workers have a little bit of negotiating leverage. And I find it, quite frankly, kind of disheartening and strange that everyone's outraged that people don't want to come to work for $7 an hour plus tips. A lot of these businesses should go away. If they can't afford to pay their people a living wage, and you're a restaurant, and they're saying, well, I might go out of business. Well, boss, you should be out of business. We don't need businesses like that.
Okay, got to take a quick break, but we're going to be back with Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU's Stern School of Business, on the Recount Daily Pod. All right, welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from the Recount and iHeartRadio. We're here with Scott Galloway, who's a professor of marketing at NYU's Stern School of Business. What do you think overall this pandemic has done for higher education and our outlook on higher education?
So COVID-19's, I think, enduring feature. It'll be seen as an accelerant more than a change agent. And typically, it's what it's ushered in is this massive era of innovation and digitization. Once there is kind of cheap capital, venture technology comes in a significant way, you see consolidation. And we're seeing that to a certain extent here, and that is, applications to the top 100 schools are up 20 plus percent. Berkeley, they're up 28%. NYU, they're up low 20s. Harvard, they're up 30s. What's upsetting is that we're seeing, as you referenced, fewer and fewer applications to junior colleges. And we're even seeing fewer applications for Pell Grants, which is really disheartening because what it means is if you're in that weight class, you're consolidating the power. These schools are getting more elite, more exclusive, more expensive. And basically, they've said that we are here for two cohorts. The first is what I call the freakishly remarkable. The second is the children of wealthy people. If you're a child of a household that's in the top 1%, you're, get this, Rena, 77 times more likely to get into an elite university. Five of the Ivies and 32 of the 100 top universities have more kids from the top 1% than the bottom 60%. And this is so fucked up. You know who doesn't need college? You know who doesn't need college? The top 1%. They show up with outstanding educations. They show up with outstanding networks. Quite frankly, they probably have higher EQ. They've been exposed to different nations. They've been exposed to possibly more resources at home in terms of childcare and child rearing. They're the people that need college the least. But we've decided our job is to create a European-style caste system. We have to go back to this notion that higher ed reclaims its rightful position as a place where we give good kids great opportunities, not freakishly remarkable and rich kids, immense opportunities to maintain their dynasties.
Scott, it's been such a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, Rena.
And now to the look ahead. Here's what else we're watching today.
The House of Representatives returns from its summer recess a week earlier than expected to vote on the congressional budget for 2022 and to take up the $550 billion infrastructure bill that recently passed the Senate. Vice President Kamala Harris is in Singapore today for a bilateral meeting with the Prime Minister to discuss regional security, the global response to the corona pandemic, and climate change. Harris continues on to Vietnam on Tuesday. And coming soon to a theater near you, CinemaCon begins today in Las Vegas. The largest in-person gathering of cinema owners will watch previews of forthcoming movies and hear presentations on how to reinvigorate the theater experience. While the event is for movie theater owners only, keep an eye online as studios tend to release their latest trailers to the public before any leaks can make it out. The domestic box office is still struggling to regain its footing after the pandemic shuttered theaters in March of 2020. Have a great day, everyone. I'll see you back tomorrow. This is a Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount and iHeartRadio. Our thanks to Scott Galloway for being on the show. And if you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod and leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.